So I've heard that there are some famous people who have benefited from Alexander technique. I'm not asking for your patient list, but do you know of some singers and musicians and actors who have used this?
Yeah, there are a lot of famous, well, in terms of actors, Paul Newman springs to mind, Julie Andrews. She's a singer as well, is she? I'm not sure. Paul McCartney has had lessons. The list is quite long. I'm trying to think of some of the other names. I wrote down a couple. Paul Newman, Julie Andrews, Yehuda Menuhin, James Galway. There's quite a list. If you go to my website and there's a page called "What Is the Alexander Technique and What Are the Benefits," I've listed perhaps a couple of dozen famous people.
Okay.
I might also add that there, I think it's 3 Nobel Prize winners were students of the technique. And one of them, a guy named Nicholas Tinbergen, who got the Nobel Prize in medicine at one point, I believe it was medicine, his talk to the acceptance speech, half of it was devoted to the Alexander technique.
Is that right?
So there have been plenty of famous people, writers, Aldous Huxley, people like that, who George Bernard Shaw was a student of the technique. That was a long time ago, obviously. But there are quite a few famous people who've had lessons and have written about the technique.
It sounds like Alexander technique is pretty holistic. It sounds like it's about the person changing rather than something coming from the outside, like a pill or whatever, and being changed. And also the specialists are called teachers rather than therapists. So do you consider Alexander technique to be a type of healthcare?
Well, that's a tough question. It's certainly not a medical process. We don't diagnose disease. We don't treat specific illnesses or complaints. We really are interested in how the person functions, particularly at a physical level. How well do they do whatever it is that they have chosen to do? And in the course of improving the quality of how you use your body or your physical mechanism, if you will, it's quite possible, and often does happen, that certain ailments get better. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people find that they don't get back pain as much anymore, or if they do, it's much milder. But we don't ever go into a lesson. I would never tell a student, well, this is going to take care of your back pain, or this is going to take care of your carpal tunnel syndrome. Rather, I say this is going to improve how you function physically, and it's certainly likely to have beneficial effects, and the effects might not be what you expect ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
It might be that something else changes first. And there's no way that anyone can predict exactly how improving your physical functioning is going to play out in terms of aches and pains.
So it is a holistic approach. I mean, you're just helping the person overall, mm-hmm. and there may be some things that were bothering them that may, be brought up at the same time.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it's also holistic in another way. There's a lot of talk these days about mind-body unity, mind-body connection, and so on. It's kind mm-hmm. of a buzzword. You hear that a lot.
Right.
Alexander, who was developing his ideas, F. Matthias Alexander is his full name, was the developer of the technique, was doing this in the late 19th century, early 20th century. And he came to the conclusion, based on his work on himself and then then working with other people, that mind and body were really just two sides of the same coin. That they were completely interrelated. They were two aspects of the same thing. Now, this doesn't sound so strange today, but in 1900, that was pretty radical.
Yeah, really.
It may have been around in Eastern cultures for thousands of years, but in the West, that was not a generally accepted idea. And he went so far as to say that there's no way you can really disentangle one from the other. Mm-hmm. And some things you do might be relatively more mental, and some things you do might be relatively more physical. But that anytime you had some mental, you had physical, and anytime you had some physical, you had mental. And it was a big mistake to separate them. In his view, they were really part and parcel of the same thing, mm-hmm. our being. And in fact, his most accessible book on the technique is a book called The Use of the Self. And by self, he meant everything, mental, uh-huh. physical, the whole ball of wax.
Okay. When I think of holistic, I think of mind and body and spirit. Is there a spiritual aspect to Alexander Technique as well?
There can be for some people. I don't think for Alexander himself that was something that that played a big role in his life.
Okay.
My impression of what he was like is that he was a very practical, down-to-earth guy who really just was looking at improved physical and mental functioning. But he never wrote about the spiritual side of things. Others, some teachers and some students have seen in the work a spiritual component. And there are even a few books that discuss that. My own personal view is that, yes, we are spiritual beings, but we inhabit a physical body. And the technique is really about how we use that physical body, which can in turn have some influence on our spiritual development. But I don't see the technique as being inherently spiritual, if you understand what I'm saying.
Uh-huh, yeah. I think each type of holistic practice seems to approach the mind, body, spirit largely from one of those three and then moving outwards to the other two. And so,
I think that's right. And I would say that in that way of looking at it, the Alexander technique starts with the mind.
Right.
And how our thoughts affect our actions. How the quality of our thinking affects the quality of our posture and movement.
So, like you said before, when you start with a client, student, and you ask them to start noticing little things, mm-hmm. and that's a mental activity.
Uh-huh. I'm asking him to start thinking, and by thinking, I would include noticing,
uh-huh.
In ways that they probably aren't used to.
Right.
Not that anything I also tell people right at the start that there is nothing in this work that is inherently complicated. It is, in fact, the essence of simplicity, which doesn't mean that it's easy, mm-hmm. but it is extraordinarily simple.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, a teacher of mine, the late Marjorie Barstow, who was lived here in Lincoln, Nebraska most of her life, and many people regard it as the finest teacher in the world, and used to say sometimes when people would start asking her more and more, let's say, academic questions about the technique or speculative questions about it, she would say, "You people just won't believe how simple this work is."
Uh-huh.
Is very, very careful not to say how easy it is.
Right.
He recognized that it was a real challenge to get some of our, say, intellectual conceits and really think about something as basic as how we stand and how we move in a very simple, almost naive way.
Which, by the way,
is one reason why kids, young kids, if they are at all motivated to make changes in their in themselves, will respond very, very quickly to Alexander Lesson.
The
problem is, though, that most kids, if anything that smacks of posture, is not really likely to appeal to them.
Right.
So not that many kids take lessons. But those who do, or those who are motivated because, for example, let's say they have an interest in music and they're running up against some limitations or pain issues, they respond incredibly quickly to this work.
Mm-hmm.
I work every summer with a group of high school kids who is a solo singer workshop. It's held every summer at Nebraska Wesleyan University here in Lincoln. It's apparently, my understanding, it's the only program of its type in the country that is specifically designed for high school students who have done some singing but want to develop their solo singing ability.
Okay.
And I find that I can give them some very simple ideas to put into practice. And what never ceases to amaze me is that they actually do that.
Mm-hmm.
If we do what I ask them to do, they notice the change, and then they can continue doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And often they will develop abilities that my adult students might take months to do.
Mm-hmm. So, Robert, for someone who doesn't sing or act or play an instrument, what are some of the specific problems that you've seen the Alexander technique help with?
Well, as I said, most people who come for lessons who are not performers come because they're experiencing discomfort or pain of some kind. Sometimes people will come because someone has told them or they have themselves observed that their posture is not good and that may be affecting them both physically and maybe affecting them professionally. After all, in one sense, even if you're not an actor, you are an actor. We're all playing a role. I play the role of an Alexander teacher. Someone who's, let's say, a high school teacher plays the role of a teacher. There's always some acting involved in mm-hmm. whatever you do,
mm-hmm.
some performance, let's say. And But mainly, it's people who have experienced discomfort or pain. And someone somewhere has told them that the Alexander technique might help.
Uh-huh. So it's back pain, it's carpal tunnel syndrome.
Yeah, it's stiff neck, stiff shoulders, basically stress-related kind of issues. That manifest as pain. Of course, in recent years, the very term carpal tunnel syndrome and the term repetitive strain injury, or RSI, those are words that are in our common vocabulary now. Everyone talks about them. And I think for some people it's hard to remember, but if you go back 20 years, 25 years, those words were hardly ever used.
Mm-hmm.
The only people who knew about them, but not using that terminology, were musicians. Musicians have had those issues forever.
Right.
I don't believe because they, of course, are repeating the same acts over and over again.
Right.
I don't believe that they used that actual terminology, but they suffered from those issues. But really, carpal tunnel syndrome, repetitive strain injury, is kind of a function of the computer era.
Yeah. I've heard of other processes, like one that's called Feldenkrais method and another called Traeger, that sound similar to how you're describing Alexander technique. How are these different?
Well, what they all have in common is an interest in physical functioning. Sometimes they're lumped together under a general category of movement education. They're all interested. They all have an interest in the same basic thing, which is how well do we use our bodies? In how well do we sit, stand, move, do whatever we do? They approach this issue from quite different perspectives. I don't really want to speak as an expert on the other ones. I would say that the Alexander technique, in a way, is the most I'm going to put this word in quotes, but cerebral of the three or of them, that it is the most oriented towards learning how to change the way you think and notice.
Okay.
In order to make the change. Feldenkrais, actually Moshe Feldenkrais, took some Alexander lessons at one point, and I believe he was probably a bit influenced by that. But he developed his methodology within a completely different framework. And I would say it's a more exploratory process. It's more, try this, try that, explore this. And they're depending a bit on a kind of an internal reprogramming of some kind. It can be a very powerful method. I mean, it's an excellent process. And I would say that it might have an edge over the Alexander technique in the case of people who are not able to bring their mental faculties to bear on their situation.
Okay.
If someone is in a lot of severe pain, really severe pain, it's not likely that you're going to be able to get them to change their thinking.
Well, we really appreciate what you've done with the alexandertechnique.com, Robert.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Robert Rickover, and he is an Alexander Technique teacher. He has several websites. I will list those in the show notes at holistichealthnation.com. And thanks for spending time with us, Robert.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.